This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
You know, Joe, I ran because of you. I ran because of Barack Obama, because you did a poor job. If I thought you did a good job, I would have never run. I would have never run. I ran because of you. I'm looking at you now. You're a politician. I ran because of you.
I'm looking at you now. You're a politician. I ran because of you. Good morning, Dan and Amy, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. That was, I think, the signature line of the debate for President Trump.
Yeah, but your thoughts, your takeaways, who won? Will it change the trajectory of the race? What did you learn last night? What did you learn last night that you've been doing radio for 12 hours?
Please, go ahead.
No, I mean, I honestly thought that President Trump won hands down. But then if you listen to the left, they think that Biden won hands down. But it was a much more measured civil debate. Kristen Welker did an amazing job. I thought she hit Biden very hard with questions about, you know, the crime bill, 1994 crime bill. But President Trump, he's more presidential. He physically looked stronger. He sounded stronger. And he's a better leader than Joe Biden's going to be.
Kristen Welker did not do an amazing job.
Compared to Chris Wallace, that was night and day.
That's a low bar, and she had the benefit of having the microphones cut, and she had the benefit of that first experience. But in terms of the quality of her questions, it was the same thing. I'm not complaining because it's what you expect going in, but I'm not going to be told that Kristen Welker was some sort of marked departure from what you get from the D.C. press corps. She wasn't. All of the questions start from the left's premise. She derailed the conversation about Hunter Biden that should have been allowed to blossom. She also should have asked the question during that period if she was going to press both candidates. She should have asked the question. No, let's just hold on a second. So the emails that have been unearthed by the New York Post, are they authentic or not? Did you ever speak with Hunter Biden about his business dealings overseas while you were vice president? Because his business partner, one of his former business partners, says that you did. There's an email that indicates that you did. So what is the truth, Vice President Biden? That's what an actual competent moderator who is playing it straight up for both sides would have said. That's not what Kristen Welker did. And that element of the debate should have never been derailed the way that it was by her. So she is standard issue, but you knew that going in. And so I blame her less than I do President Trump for, again, having the focus to press the important point or points on that matter. He has the tendency to sort of start in the middle of the story. There's no setup and there's no driving to a point. There's just sort of the tit for tat. And he had the opportunity, as we discussed yesterday, to just put it to Joe Biden on those issues the way that he actually did somewhat effectively on other issues like the energy policy. But I think on the Biden Inc. story, it's not going to go away, but it's not because of President Trump exactly. He pressed it a little bit, and he got just enough to turn this into a story today, and I think perhaps for the rest of the campaign, particularly because of those individuals like Hunter Biden's former business partner coming forward, and maybe that's something that Republicans can take up, since this is a governmental matter, since this does relate in part to what he did with his official duties as vice president. It would be nice for them to press that issue. But the way that Trump was able to do this is when he went full Jan Brady. When Joe Biden said this is Russian disinformation.
You mean the laptop is now another Russia hoax?
And that's exactly what
where he's going.
See, before last night, he was just sort of giving you the generic. It's a smear campaign. It's garbage from Trump's henchmen. What you got there is, oh, now you're saying this is a Russian hoax. the whole thing is a Russian hoax, even the parts of it that don't deal with Russia. So now you have the ability to plumb the depths of this a little bit more and use Joe Biden's statement against him in order to advance that story.
And here Trump is about emails.
All of the emails, the horrible emails of the kind of money that you were raking in, you and your family. And Joe, you were vice president when some of this was happening, and it should have never happened. And I think you owe an explanation to the American people. Why is it? Somebody just had a news conference a little while ago who was essentially supposed to work with you and your family, but what he said was damning. And regardless of me, I think you have to clean it up and talk to the American people. Maybe you can do it right now.
Yeah,
I like that challenge. I thought that was a strong moment.
It wasn't bad, but specifically.
Say his name. His name Tony.
No, I don't care about his name. Is what he said true or untrue? Did Hunter Biden and run deals by you? Did you provide advice and counsel to your son with respect to dealing with foreign interests, foreign governments, in some cases enemies of America, like the Chinese communists? Did you do that as you were point person for policy in these areas for the Obama administration? Did you do that, yes or no? Did you meet with this Burisma executive set up by Hunter Biden as one of the emails detailed, yes or no? Were you being cut in on deals, big guy, as one of the emails suggests? Are those emails authentic? Did you know about the FBI money laundering investigation that appears to have been the predicate to subpoena your son's laptop? Specific questions. He had the knowledge of it because he talked about it in a general way, but drill down to the specifics to put him on the spot. Because when you say, you know, you should come clean, then he just gives you the blanket dismissal. This is Russian disinformation. The canned line, which Trump could have come back on, the canned line that it was clearly rehearsed. I'm press
for a reason.
No, press. Muddy the waters with his tax returns and his business dealings, and then come back and say, now we shouldn't be talking about our families. We should be talking about your families out there in America. We should talk about your families. We shouldn't. This is us talking. No, Joe. We are talking about the American families here, because your family leveraged your office that they finance for personal enrichment. You and your family fleeced the American people and perhaps compromised America's interests by leveraging your office for personal gain. That is relevant to American families. Should have seen it come and should have been ready to pounce.
Well, here's what the deal. With regard to Ukraine, we had this whole question about whether or not, because he was on the board, I later learned of a Burisma, a company, that somehow I had done something wrong. Yet every single solitary person, when he was going through his impeachment, testifying under oath who worked for him, said, I did my job impeccably. I carried out U.S. policy. Not one single solitary thing was out of line.
Yeah, that's not the issue. And by the way, that's not a fair characterization of what happened during that impeachment hearing, including the concerns that were expressed at the time of our Foreign Service personnel learning of Hunter Biden's board appointment to Burisma. People like Assistant Secretary of State George Kent said it looked bad. They expressed concern. That's not true, how he's characterizing it. But you have to be, you know, you have to have the specifics and ready to deal in those specifics for when he comes back with these generic dismissals and mischaracterizations of what actually occurred.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Peggy Noonan writing in the Wall Street Journal, no particular fan of Trump. He succeeded, Trump did, in doing what Joe Biden didn't have to do. If you wanted or needed an excuse, an out to vote for Trump, if you wanted an argument that justified your decision in a conversation in the office, he probably gave you what you need. Is that how you viewed it, or did you view it more positively than that, that Trump won a decisive victory, and this will continue to build on the momentum that he had coming into last night's debate. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Greg in LaGrange, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, we can.
I really don't care what Peggy Noonan says. She's never Trumper. So,
well, I know. That's why it's worth remarking upon that she said he probably gave you what you need if you're looking for a reason to vote for him.
I think the thing that stood out to me, and I watched the debate, and I thought Trump did well on the energy policy. I mean, he got Biden basically lying, and he ran a campaign ad immediately. And he went after him on his taxes, and he said Mueller found nothing. The expectation I had for Trump was met. And he's never going to be
he's never going to be you.
The golden egg. Yeah, well, he's never going to be Dan. Dan was a very Joe Biden. But the two things that stood out was the fact that Joe Biden looked old. Mm-hmm. He looked terrible. And at one point, he looked at his watch, and he fiddled with his watch. And as you let him talk, you could see he was talking about things like, we're going to get rid of oil and gas by 2025. And, you know, he started stumbling around.
He stumbled eight times. We were counting at our table.
Right.
We had a viewing party where he started slurring, and I thought, ooh, he might pass out.
He did not want to be there. And then when he looked at the watch, it was Clinton, H.W. Bush, H. Bush all over again. Trump just can't finish the job. He just can't finish the job. And he could have, especially on the line Dan presented, by just pulling up some of the interviews that Hunter had on himself. I thought it was admirable of him not to pull up Hunter and try and drag him and his personal problems out in public. I thought that was admirable. But he didn't have to do that to make his point. Yeah. Is it enough? I don't know. We'll find out on November 3rd.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
We're denied a third debate.
This sort of moment with Joe Biden, this was, I think, when he was pressed on this was when they were going back and forth, pressed on the crime bill, and Trump came back at him again on the crime bill and the impact on black Americans.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's sort of the gist of, I think, Joe Biden's disposition all night. Is this over yet? To Greg's point.
Go home.
Now, one thing Greg mentioned about oil and gas, interesting bookends to the debate.
Right.
He opens the debate by saying no fewer than three times he's open to open-ended lockdowns, if not actually promoting open-ended lockdowns.
Yeah.
And he ends with eliminating the oil and gas industry. So if you're worried about America's economy, if you're worried about your jobs and your retirement accounts and everything related to your economic security, starting with lockdowns and ending with eliminating the oil and gas industry is not good news for you.
But I loved when President Trump followed up. Did you hear him? People in Texas and in Louisiana who stand to lose their jobs?
Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys. I thought Trump did well last night, and he was able to counter Biden very well, like when Biden kept trying to say life under Trump was, you know, doom and gloom and stuff. There was a line I wish he would have gotten in there where he said, well, 56% of Americans say their lives are better today than they were 4 years ago. That would have been nice and Reagan-esque, but that's okay. His debate was good. It was measured. He didn't step in any landmines. There's no weird quotes like stand by and stand back that leftist media can drag out through the weekend. And Lindsey Graham pointed this out yesterday, and I agree with him. I think he helped down ballot Republicans a lot because they can spend the rest of the final week and a half of the campaign going on the offensive and not having to defend a bad debate by Trump or something goofy that he said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. The demeanor is more affable. Obviously, the microphones as we sort of suggested turned out to probably help discipline him a little bit, and so he came off in terms of presentation as more poised and substantive and restrained, which was good.
And besides shutting down the oil industry, moms out there, grandparents who are doing e-learning, Joe Biden, if he becomes president, We may never get our schools back. Listen to him placating the teachers' union.
For example, schools. Schools, they need a lot of money to open. They need to deal with ventilation systems. They need to deal with smaller classes, more teachers, more pods. And he's refused to support that money, or at least up to now.
I mean...
So this is important, and this was actually a bit of a missed opportunity for Trump at the beginning during the COVID-19 discussion. This is where you actually have to listen to what somebody is saying and then explain the implications of what they're saying.
Yeah.
That's what a good debater does. What he's saying is what, Joe? We are not going to open schools until we retrofit all the HVAC systems in America's schools.
Happen. There's not enough time in a year to have that happen.
So what you're saying, Joe, is we are going, you support open-ended lockdowns of schools. Well, let me tell you something. And this is where one specific or two, you don't need to be an encyclopedia, one specific or two, 20,000 doctors and public health professionals signed the Great Barrington Declaration saying the kids have to be back in school. The American Pediatric Association, the NPR has a story out today, Joe, that the threat that kids pose is being overblown. There's a Yale study on daycare centers that kids aren't transmitters. There's the Brown University study on 200,000 kids across 47 states. Their case incidence rate, as well as the adults in the schools, is a magnitude lower than the general population. Joe, what are you talking about? Joe, what are you doing? We absolutely cannot keep the schools closed. You want the economy closed? You want your kids' schools closed in perpetuity until we get to Joe Biden's fantasy land of zero cases. Then go ahead with Joe Biden and nuttiness. This isn't just unrealistic what he's saying. It's nutty. Nutty. That would have been a moment.
Instead, President Trump said this.
I want to open the schools. The transmittal rate to the teachers is very small. But I want to open the schools. We have to open our country. We're not going to have a country. You can't do this. We can't keep this country closed. This is a massive country with a massive economy. People are losing their jobs. They're committing suicide. There's depression, alcohol, drugs at a level that nobody's ever seen before. There's abuse, tremendous abuse. We have to open our country. You know, I've said it.
That's a serviceable answer.
It's but
fine.
It's not enough.
But it just could have been so much more powerful. The construct I always talk about with debates, PPP. Principle, policy, passion. State the principle that informs the entire discussion on a topic, that informs the policy choice you made or are promoting, and then passion, an anecdote, a data point to just drive it home, to make it concrete for people. He's just not good at that. And it's just, I know that's not going to change. I'm perhaps a tougher grader than others, but I'm not going to grade on a curve. Stephen, Lincoln Park.
Hey there.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
Well, I listen to you guys every single morning.
Thank you.
And I love both of you. And Amy, I love you for your passion. And I agree with Amy. Trump won this hands down. It was easy. And Dan, you're right. I mean, he could have really nailed him on, you know, honor and stuff a little bit more and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Things work out. Yeah, they all work out. Here's the deal why Biden lost. He killed himself with Pennsylvania last night.
Yeah.
He killed himself because he went Green New Deal in his closing. And you kissed Pennsylvania goodbye.
All right, thanks for the call, Steve.
Well, drinky drink. And Trump's thanks for calling though. And Trump already is out with a campaign saying Joe Biden saying repeatedly that he's going to end fracking.
Kent and Aurora.
Yeah, Biden is just a shell of a man. Let's just pretend he has great ideas and great plans. For 8 years, either he never shared them with Obama, which that makes him evil, or he did share all of them with Obama.
And Obama, the most brilliant man in the universe, rejected them.
Thanks for the call, Kent. This is what he's referencing.
For 8 years, why didn't you get it done? You had 8 years to get it done. Now you're saying you're going to get it done because you're all talk and no action, Jim.
We got.
All right. So you've heard my criticism of Trump. This is one of the things he did well last night. It was a motif throughout the debate.
You had 8 years. Why didn't you get it done?
Bigger than that. What's the difference between Trump 2016 and Trump 2020? The record. He did a good job refreshing people's recollections of his record and refreshing people's recollections of what Biden's record is and isn't. The 8 years, the 47 years in D.C., the you're just a politician, all that sets up very nicely for the market position he occupied in 2016 that took him to the Oval Office. And really, little has changed, as I said, other than the record that he's amassed. And unlike the first debate, this time there was a lot more detail about his record, including in areas where he has real growth, I think, over 2016, growth that may turn out to be pivotal, like with African-American voters. And we'll get to that. David in Lansing.
Hi. It's possible that Biden won the debate last night, because I only listened to about half of it, and I heard this phrase about at least seven times. Right. Come on, man. So that was very persuasive to me. Yep. I really like that. That's what I want in a president. Come on, man.
It's a strong argument, David. Yeah, we put together a little compilation of Joe Biden's answers. This took up about a quarter of his time.
Come on.
Well, at our watch party last night at Bolingbrook Golf Club, anytime he said, come on, man, people would drink.
Come on, man.
Yeah. And it was seven times.
He does a great gob from Arrested Development impersonation. Okay. No question about it. Mary Kay in Western Springs.
Hi, you guys. Dan, you're so right about Biden family issues. He should have been driving that home, and he didn't. I don't think Trump did that very well. He doesn't trap Biden.
Yeah.
You know, in debate, you got to trap him, and you got to get him to fall. Amy, he looked like so sickly, right?
Yeah, he did.
Didn't Biden look sickly? I sort of was like, oh, my, you know, that's frightening to look at a guy who's
past his bedtime. I mean, he just seemed exhausted toward the end, slurring his words a little bit, and the way his shoulders were caved in, and it looks like he just wanted to go
home. Well, I got to say, though, I thought Biden had okay energy, and
at the beginning,
I understand Biden's limitations, like I understand Trump's, and because of what the expectation was coming into these debates for Biden, because of his history of gaffes and misremembering things like what office he's running for, you expected him to have one of those moments in one of these two debates, and he really didn't. And so, unfortunately, Trump lowered the bar for Joe Biden.
It's true, but I want to tell you the two things that Biden said that really made me sad. We're going into a dark winter. How more depressing can it be? We're going into a dark winter, Amy. And then he, at the end, the last question, he talked about, we'll give you hope and eliminate fear. Well, that's a bunch of have we heard that from Obama? Hope and change. I mean, we're going to eliminate, we're going to give you hope. And we're not going to, and there'll be no fear. That is a bunch of BS.
And here's, here's my favorite, quick line.
Thanks,
yeah.
Mary Kay.
I'm going to shut down the virus, not the country.
I mean, how long do you think he rehearsed that? Oh, about 3 days?
It's just a
shut down the virus. No one's shutting down the virus. We're not going to eradicate COVID. It's a fantasy land.
I wish he would have seized upon that. And also, to Mary Kay's point, when Biden was talking about, you're going to wake up and go to the breakfast table tomorrow and somebody's not going to be there because they're dead, effectively. I mean, what the hell are you talking about?
He's done that twice now.
This idea that everybody, you're going to lose somebody in your family, I guarantee it. I mean, the point here, and Trump should have made it, is when Biden accused Trump of panicking at the outset, number one, I didn't panic. Number two, yes, I promote optimism with respect to our ability to live with this, to deal with this, to defeat this. Because in times of real crisis, leaders are supposed to be level-headed, not hair on fire. And Joe Biden, you're hair on fire right now on this debate stage, talking about people losing family members, you're predicting they will, like, tomorrow morning. What the hell's wrong with you?
You're sitting at the kitchen table this morning deciding, well, we can't get new tires, they're bald because we have to wait another month or so. Or are we going to be able to pay the mortgage? Or who's going to tell her she can't go back to community college? They're the decisions you're making in the middle-class families like I grew up in Scranton and Claymont.
That's a typical political statement. Let's get off this China thing. And then he looks, the family, around the table, everything. Just a typical politician when I see that.
Do you think Trump handled that well?
Brian in Oak Forest.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm in the field of HVAC, so I'm pretty optimistic about my success in Biden's America when I'm installing emission-free furnaces at a high cost for all my family and friends. So I got
and every school in America.
Yeah, you got to retrofit those.
Thanks, Brian. John on the South Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. It was a great watch party yesterday. And I think Trump did it with that spot you just put when he says Biden spun to everything. Everybody's family and how you doing. He couldn't answer a question. I thought Trump won about 70-30. And I really liked how Trump handled himself. And I think Biden, at the end, when he I guess he looked down at his watch. When he looked down, I really thought the guy was going to fall out and just drop on the stage. I was really kind of scared and nervous for the guy. You guys have a great weekend.
Thanks,
John. Hey, John, thanks for walking me to my car last night.
Oh, what a
very
gentleman.
Very gentlemanly.
Yeah, Bolingbrook's tough neighborhood.
Well, you never know. Got to watch yourself.
Vince in St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, the thing, he is dark. The vice president is very dark. And I hate when he looked into the camera and said, you know, about someone across from you who's going to die. And the other thing is now he gets to hide in his basement and not answer any questions and get confronted by anything.
He's going to have another car rally today
in
Wilmington, Delaware.
Yeah, although I got to tell you, you know, hiding in his basement, cherry picking, you know, the mindless drones that are employed by network affiliates to answer canned questions. I don't know that that serves him in the next 2 weeks. You know, this you want to close with a flourish, not with a whimper. So I don't know that that serves him, but a lot of it's how the flourish that Trump closes with. Olud in Montreal.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the moderator did an okay job, not so great. I mean, she gave them time to respond, which was good. But again, the premise of the question, asking from the left, is not. I don't think that was a good job there. But Trump also did a great job pointing out that Biden is a typical politician and pointing out that small businesses cannot survive with increasing the minimum wage laws. But the main point about driving home some of the points for the GOP, I don't understand why they can explain that the success of the government should be to take people out of the government, out of depending on the government, instead of waiting for the big guy to give people money. People want to fend for themselves.
Yes. Excellent point, Bree. And nice use of the big guy. Thanks, Alud. Glenn in the South Suburbs. Hey, Glenn.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. A question for you and then one comment on the thing. Joe Biden's son did such a great job as a board of directors of the Ukrainian energy company. Why would Joe Biden want to put the oil business out of business?
Well,
with that great job his son did.
Well, he wants to put our domestic oil and gas sector out of business so that, you know, so Burisma has less competition and other Biden family interests. You know, part of the Biden family brand, as one exchange seemed to indicate.
Okay, thank you very much. The other thing is it's kind of, well, I would hope that if you recall, Mr. Biden was put in charge of a cancer under the Obama administration.
Oh, yeah.
He was going to have that cured.
Yeah.
I hope he would do better on the virus than he did on the cancer. Even in his own family, it didn't work.
Oh, well.
That gets personal.
Well,
right.
No, that's, yeah,
that's too personal,
that's too much.
Glenn. But,
kills more people than COVID, folks.
But the idea, though, of that would have been a moment to say, I hope you do a better job with COVID-19, although that's prospectively, it assumes he's going to be president, which Trump doesn't want to assume. He could have just done a stop, look, and listen. Hey, Joe, since you're the infectious disease expert, not that this is infectious, you're the disease expert, then can you give us a
update?
Stop, look, and listen on cancer? You know, that cure that you're working on? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You're on notice, Chicago vassals. No more Mr. Nice Triple Threat. You're locked down, and sorry, Dad, you can't come over for Thanksgiving because one of the Rona Busters said so.
What? My favorite. Not Clorox Queen, the other one.
I do not want you having anybody into your home who is not essential for being there. They live there, or they're providing essential a service like home health care, education, or childcare. And if you have people in, please, masks are crucial.
Wait a second. You just said you can't. Oh, if the people that are legitimate, according to Rona Buster number two, the Rona Buster sidekick.
She's the hand sanitizer Rona Buster.
It's wonderful. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Want you to call in if you've got questions about who's allowed in your home. We'll do our best to tell you who of your family, friends, you know, your social circles that we'll allow home. And then we'll pass on the names to the Rona Busters to get authorization or denial, based on saving grandma and grandpa.
What about the plumber? You know, if your pipe breaks, can I have a plumber over? Not according to her, Dan. What about my handyman Dorsch? Can he come into my house?
If it's an emergency, I would think that in their magnificence, the Rona Busters would allow an emergency plumbing situation to be addressed. But
they got to wear a hazmat suit, right? Yeah.
Sure, of course, but you can't. Not just for pedestrian repairs. It's got to be an emergency. Otherwise, just sit quietly in your room and wait for word from the Rona Busters.
We are asking all Chicagoans to refrain from gatherings of more than six people, as well as social gatherings of any sort after 10 p.m.
We
are taking these measures to avoid potential catastrophic impacts later.
Yeah, you've got five kids. I'm sorry, one of them is going to have to go. Because you can't have seven people in the same room in your house, so we're going to have to put the padlocks on the doors for at least one of those kids, make sure that not the entire family isn't congregated at any given time.
Ask me how many people died in Chicago yesterday from COVID. Two. The day before? Zero. This is about case count. It was before about the positivity rate. Now it's case count because now we have 600-plus Chicagoans who tested positive for COVID-19. And now she's implementing what's called the business curfew.
A business curfew means the following. Effective tomorrow, all non-essential businesses will be closed to the public from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. All liquor sales will be closed as of 9 p.m. across the city. That's restaurants, cocktails to go, and any other alcohol sales. Stop at 9 p.m. And as with the first surge, exceptions will be made for our essential businesses, like grocery stores, pharmacies, and restaurant delivery and takeout services. Meanwhile, bars that don't operate with a food license will no longer be permitted to serve customers inside.
You're going to sit down and take this? You're going to defy these orders from her and from Governor Pritzker? A lot of people in the suburbs are. A lot of people in Rockford, because they're on lockdown now starting Sunday. The majority of the bar and restaurant owners in Rockford said sorry, we're not going to follow it. Come and get us. Who's going to arrest us? Who's going to shut us down? And Pritzker said, you know, if you defy my orders, if you flout these restrictions, I'll take away your liquor and your gaming license, if you even have a gaming license. But there's a lot of restaurants that don't have liquor license. It's like, well, I don't care. Come and get us. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line.
Well, this is a moment that is coming to a head, right? It's not just in the suburbs, as anticipated, the city, outlying areas, exurban areas. And so what's the disposition? Are, you know, you're at the point now, I think, for a lot of businesses, past the point for some, where you have a decision to make. You can just concede the taking of your business, or you can peacefully fight for the preservation of your business, your livelihood, the jobs that you've created for your employees. So it's really an interesting moment for Illinois businesses, community by region as well as by sector. You know, by region, obvious, by sector, I mean, you know, dentists and professional associations for particular professionals. Are they going to activate and do something? Or are they going to take the posture, generally speaking, of Sam Toya at the Illinois Restaurant Association, who I think has been about as courageous as the...
As a fly on a wall?
As the IHSA, which is to say not courageous. You're going to take the posture of, we're going to try to work with the ruling class. We'll try to carve out as much as we can. We'll try to save as many as you can, but some of you we're not going to save because we're not going to challenge them straight away.
I mean, this is a call to action for peaceful civil disobedience. If we shut down again, there are restaurants that are never, ever going to reopen. We've already lost 5,000 restaurants and bars in the state of Illinois, mostly in Chicago. It's not sustainable.
Mike on the south side.
Yeah, good morning. Can you explain to me how she could be so heartless as to jeopardize my life between all of these restaurants still stay open and serve me and give me a chance of getting sick?
Wait,
the business hours?
Wait,
you broke up.
So say that again, Mike.
I'm being sarcastic.
No, we miss what you said.
Oh, I just don't understand how Auntie Lori could be so heartless as to allow my life to be in jeopardy between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. And those people who want to go out after 10 get a pass. She needs to be more caring about us.
Ah, yes.
And
yes.
I have to go into work.
That makes sense. Thanks for the call, Mike. Right, exactly. The lockdowns, the curfew at 10 o'clock, why not 24/7?
And here's something else she said yesterday that is infuriating our police officer and firefighter friends that listen to the show.
The time for educating people into compliance is simply over. If you're an officer, you're a fireman, paramedic, if you're a city employee, I'm telling you now, as your mayor, as your boss, you must wear a mask, period.
I am your boss. I thought she worked for us. Now she's going to go out, too, and you watch her over the weekend. When she sees firefighters and police officers, she is going to approach them and scold them and ask them, where are your masks? She might even be driving out, you know, driving around between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. looking for crowds to break up because she is the Rona buster.
Clay in Downers Grove.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, we've learned a lot about this virus, including that it's apparently nocturnal. What is it, a raccoon? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Clay. Brian in Elk Grove Village.
Yeah, hey, Dan. I got a son sitting behind your board there, Justin, who has a dog. A dog, and we want to get together on Sunday. Do the dogs have to wear masks?
Great question. Thanks for the call, Brian.
I love when family calls in.
We'll have to run that by the Runabusters. I don't know that they've addressed that, and I don't want to speak for them, God forbid. So we'll run that by the Runabusters, and we'll get back to Justin, and then he can get back to you from 6 feet or further away.
Exactly.
Right. While in a body condom. Marvin in Burlington.
Hey, good morning. I just want to say that listening to this, this is so much bigger than the coronavirus. If the society doesn't push back on this and just take this laying down and like lemmings walking over a cliff. This will never change. Today, the coronavirus. Next year, something else. The year after that, something else. I mean, where is everybody just going to take a constitutional class and say, this is not up to you. Right. This is up to us. This is up to us. My health is my health. If I decide I want to smoke cigarettes, get emphysema, heart disease, lung cancer, that's my business. That's not your business.
And it's not the government's business to tell us who can come into our house.
That's right. God gave me my body to do with it as I saw fit and to try to honor him. Not the government to tell me that they own me and I have to do what they tell me, what they say and when they say it.
Well, Marvin, let me tell you something. Why don't you start honoring your body a little bit better the way that Lori Lightfoot and J.B. Pritzker honor their bodies? And maybe we wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah, the whole thing is when are people going to wake up? My God, when are people going to wake up?
I don't know.
It's pretty darn frightening. It's pretty darn frightening.
I mean, people in Wisconsin have got to be laughing at our governors and our mayors.
Joe in Hoffman Estates.
Hey, guys. Actually, it's not funny at all of what she's doing. You got to take into account the people that are really hurting. I have a friend of mine that owns a bar. It was worth about $300,000 if he sold it. Now it's worthless. He's making about 20% of what he used to make. Oh. And I literally have never seen someone this distraught, and I literally fear for the man's life.
Does he have any outdoor seating at his bar?
Not enough to support the rents and staff and stuff like that. And he doesn't know what to do now.
Yeah, not enough.
There's nothing to sell anymore.
Not enough for the demand in the winter either.
No. I'm very sorry.
Thanks for
the
call.
I mean, last night at the Bolingbrook Golf Club, all the servers that were there, I talked to them. I said, what are you going to do? And they said, this is our last night. And one guy, he said, well, at least I have a side job as a painter. And the other, Raphael, who listens to the show, by the way, too, which we appreciate, he has to do. He has to feed a family. And I said, well, you're going to get unemployment? You're going to apply, right? And he said, well, it could take weeks until we get that. Because our unemployment system in Illinois is broken. And Pritzker hasn't done it. Well, he fired the director. Ooh, big woo. But some people haven't gotten their checks from the first time that we were under lockdown.
Lewis on the south side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
I got a comment to make, and then I got a question to ask Amy. Okay, this is my comment. It's not called the business curfew. It's called giving you the business. My question to Amy is, are you buying it? Are you buying it?
Am I buying this, what she's doing? No, she even said, I don't know what else to do. She literally, those words came out of her mouth yesterday.
Okay.
And what she should have done is October 1st, when she came out with the Rona Buster after they had dressed up, you know, like goofballs, the same press conference the day after that, they came out and said, oh, congratulations, bars are back open. You're going to be open until 1:30 in the morning. And I thought, you're going to open bars until 1:30 in the morning, but not open schools. What they should have done is open the schools first and then the bars.
Okay, so she is giving us the business.
She's giving us the business, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lewis. What's the science behind the 8% positivity rate?
I don't know. She's not a statistician, Dr. Awarde. It's a positivity rate. And so Pritzker set this.
I know.
I'm just telling you, Pritzker set
this. I know what he said. It was 5%, according to the WHO initially. Now it's 8%. Explain the change and why it's at 8%. Always force these commissars to explain the basis for their numbers, their thresholds, to the extent they have thresholds at all. Because there's no threshold out. There's only threshold in. There's only thresholds back. Where'd you get the numbers? Oh, somebody else said? Where'd they get the numbers? Do you make your own independent judgments? You know, you're a man or you're a woman of science and data. Please, the floor is yours. Give us all of the painstaking details. Has anybody heard that? I haven't. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Good morning. Well, speaking of commissars, I think one way to change the civil disobedience would be to constantly be playing Der Kommissar. You know that song from like 1983? In front of
Falco.
I mean, we have to be doing that in front of Pritzker's house or Lightfoot's house or whatever all the time. But seriously, none of this stuff is going to work because these people are so dense They aren't very bright. Obviously, this stuff didn't work before. It's not going to work now.
No. Hold on a second, Frank. Hold on. How dare you? How dare you accuse Lori Lightfoot and J.B. Pritzker of being wrong here? We failed them. Didn't you hear? We failed them. It was working. We failed them. And now there's no more Mr. Nice Triple Threat. You heard her. There's no more time for education. Now she's going to have to come in over the top. She tried. She tried to work with people like you, Frank. You failed her. Now she's got to come over the top.
Yeah, well, it doesn't work. These people are idiots. They are complete intellectual morons. The only thing that is going to work, really, to be honest with you, is when the courts have the guts to stand up against them. And I know JB is a very rich guy, and they must be afraid of that. But you know what? This is why we have these different branches of governments, checks and balances, save our republic. My God, these courts need to get involved here. The legislature certainly is. And this is just absolutely rancid the way these other branches of government have been the last 8 months.
I agree with you, Frank. But here's one other thing, though. Parties with standing, the injured parties, need to petition the courts for redress, don't they? Need to petition the courts for relief from their government. So, again, the business owners, the business communities around the state that are going under lockdown or curfew today, what are you going to do?
Well, some owners out in DuPage County, owner of a Lockport restaurant, said, we're still going to social distance. We're going to remain open. We're not going to lick people's faces, and we're not going to eat bats. And called Pritzker a dictator and said, come and get us.
That should do it.
Because if the health department comes in, they're not going to let them in. And then what's the health department going to do? Call the police? The police are here to protect the people, not the governor. And they're here to serve the people. And I don't know one cop on this planet that's going to go in and shut down a restaurant.
No.
Because they've got other things to do.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, it's not. They're not making independent judgment calls. They're being directed or not directed by their governing civilian authorities. So that's the question. So I said, well, all week, what are your local officials going to do? Because if you don't have enforcement at the local level, you don't have enforcement.
I know Chicago police are not going to do it.
We'll see.
They said they wouldn't do it. If they get a phone call saying there's eight people together at a bar and it's 11 o'clock at night, they are not going to go and break that up.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that you talked to a couple of cops and now you're
extrapolating. Oh, no, I talked to the FOP, the president of the FOP. Yeah. They're not going to do it.
And what if Lori Lightfoot tells Chief Brown to do it? And what if Chief Brown sends a line, sends the order down the line of command? Not going to do it? I love the idea that people who disagree with the policy say they're not going to do it. I'm sure that may be the disposition. When your job is on the line, are you going to willingly sacrifice your job? You think all 13,000 cops will? I don't.
I can't see them physically removing person from a booth at a restaurant.
Things you don't think you can conceive of have already happened. So I would stop trafficking in the business of taking public pronouncements from people who are not in a position to make those decisions independently. And I would also take judicial notice of the level of courage you see displayed in this city and state before, you know, your magical thinking, somebody said something, so that's how it's going to play out. Is that what you've seen happen over the last 8 months? Somebody said something and that's how it's going to play out? The only thing I've seen is somebody said something named Lightfoot or Pritzker, and that is how it's played out. The pushback from a private or public, I haven't seen that play out. Not in implementation. Have you? No. Rick on the Northwest Side.
Hello.
Hello.
Go, Rick.
Yes. I was reading how BLM and Antifa are planning violence if it looks like Trump is going to win. Are they included in Her Highness's royal dictates?
Only if they own a bar or restaurant. Thanks for the call, Rick. Bill in LaSalle County.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've seen a lot of information on social media about recall Pritzker, but is there an actual ability to recall our governor?
Yeah, but it's highly difficult, and you don't have the political will in Springfield that required. You don't have the balance of power in Springfield that's required. And plus, I mean, you don't even have an opposition party. I mean, this is the point. I go back again and again. this is what should happen. Okay, well, who's going to do it? There is no opposition political party in this state. So this is about platoons of democracy, business owners, civic and philanthropic organizations, just ordinary residents who are customers or clients of these businesses in question, banding together. Nobody is coming to help you. Has that not been obvious for, I don't know, the better part of the last 30 years at minimum? No one is coming to help you. Where is somebody going to do that? They're not going to do it. So now what do you do? Now what do you do when you are in the crosshairs? And it's very much like, it's almost like talking about your right to self-defense, Second Amendment. You are being forced to defend yourself. You don't want to do it. You don't want to have to defend your own life. You would wish that people who you elected to office would be there for you. They're not. They're not in this state. So now what do you do? I mean, I just can't put it in starker terms than that. And people have to confront that reality. People are confronting that reality. And the people who are suggesting that there's some white knight in the offing are deluding themselves. What are you going to do? You're forced to defend yourself now. Lloyd in West Suburbs.
I fully believe that this whole 10 o'clock curfew is actually just trying to get us ready for the election. I think that she's just waiting for the riots when Trump wins.
All right. Thanks for the call, Lloyd.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560. The Answer.
It is. That one goes out to Frank in Arlington Heights, Derek Commissar. Yesterday in Waukegan, it was reported about 100 Black Lives Matter protesters marched through the streets demanding justice. After that police-involved shooting we discussed yesterday, a 19-year-old Marcellus Stinnett killed in a traffic stop. His girlfriend, 20-year-old Tafara Williams, was injured, but she will survive her injuries, thankfully. The police version of the story, to refresh, is suspicious car stopped, car takes off. So here we have noncompliance again. Another officer is enlisted, backup. They get the car stopped. Officer gets out of the car. The car begins to reverse at the officer. He opens fire. So you're talking about two young Black Americans, a man and a woman, and you're talking about a Latino police officer. We have to disclose the race because that's all the D.C. press corps is going to talk about, and their Chicago outpost, that's all they're going to talk about. So we have to include race in the conversation, unfortunately. And so that's where it's at. That's what we know. We don't have any video of the incident yet. And it's usually video of the incident that sparks that sustains the reaction. So we'll see what video is made available. The mayor has made a call for anybody who has a video beyond what the squad cars have to bring it forward. But that's what we know at this point. And so against this backdrop, of course, race was a conversational topic in last night's debate. And this was what Joe Biden had to say about Trump being, you know, the most racist president in history, which is really quite a profound statement on so many levels, but okay.
Abraham Lincoln here is one of the most racist presidents we've had in modern history. He pours fuel on every single racist fire, every single one. Started off his campaign coming down the escalator saying he's going to get rid of those Mexican rapists. He's banned Muslims because they're Muslims. He has moved around and made everything worse across the board. He says to about the poor boys, last time we were on stage here, he said, I told him to stand down and stand ready. Come on.
Later in the debate when Biden started slurring his words a little bit.
The Poor Boys was the name of my high school band. We were a Fat Boys cover band.
Of course you were.
The early stages of rap. Yeah, the Proud Boys, obviously, what Joe Biden is referencing. Trump responded, you know, picking up on this, I didn't call myself Abraham Lincoln deal. I wish he would have responded. I mean, let me say something positive first.
Okay.
The record. Here was a good example of Trump refreshing people's recollection of his record. And he went through the First Step Back. That's something I got done. That's not something that Obama and Biden got done. They had every opportunity. They couldn't get it done. I got it done. He talked about the 94 crime bill. Joe Biden lied about that. Said I never used the term predators is what Joe Biden said in a 1993 speech on the Senate floor in support of the 94 crime bill. Joe Biden said, quote, predators on our streets, unquote, quote, beyond the pale, unquote. They must be cordoned off from the rest of society. That's what Joe Biden said. So, again, some statements he made that are easily fact checked to be false. So that was the good part about it. The bad part is this, the personal accusation. And while Trump didn't make any misstatements here, he should have pushed back point by point. Joe, you're a unrepentant liar. Liar. And it is the most disgusting thing to cover your dislike of someone, your disagreement with someone, with untruths about their views on people who are different from them. Here's my actual record. As Trump went through with Jason Whitlock the day before an interview at the White House, Jason Whitlock from Outkick. You know, the relationships I've had over the years with celebrities of all races and creeds, and even Jesse Jackson Sr., who feted me at a Rainbow Push banquet some 30 years ago. When did I become a racist, Joe? When I became a Republican and ran for office? Number one, you continue to purposely mischaracterize what I said at my announcement. I never said all Mexicans are racist. That's ridiculous. I said because we have a porous border, you have criminals who come in from Mexico. That is not the same thing as saying all Mexicans. Obviously, I don't believe that. Number two, you're Charlottesville, fine people. That's a lie. And I hope people go to the DonaldTrump.com or whatever website he could reference and watch what I actually said. This is a lie they've told. This is the entire basis of this guy's campaign. His entire campaign is predicated on a lie.
That's why he said he ran. Yeah.
And with respect to the temporary halting of travel from particular Muslim-majority countries, it was particular Muslim-majority countries. It was states that had not done a good job of combating terrorism, Islamic terrorism in their countries that was spreading outside of their borders. And it wasn't all Muslims, and it wasn't because they're Muslims. It was specific countries. That is a lie, too. Those are three lies that Joe Biden just told, because that's all he has. All he has is to call me names, and that's all the left has generally. All they have is to call me names, to call you names who agree with me. If you agree with Trump, you're racist, you're this, you're that, you're that. All they have is the isms and phobias, and they lie about it because that's all they have. It's to use a favorite Trumpism, it's a disgrace. It's sad. That could have been a moment. Bob and Lombard, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, guys. You're doing a great job. Hey, listen, I think the moderator did kind of a poor job, because probably the biggest problem we had this year was crime and violence in the streets, and she never asked one question about that. There was no reference to it. All she did, she pretty much just covered the usual topics that more or less was covered on the first debate. As far as I'm concerned, I don't really think nothing new was added to it. I just think she did a lousy job.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Yeah, you're right. She didn't address the issue of the rioting that's been going on for months across America.
That's right.
And also, that was an opportunity for Trump when he talked about, for example, the First Step Act and what he's done on criminal justice reform. So I've done this on criminal justice reform on the one side. And on the other side, I've stood with law enforcement for law and order. And that's what I will do. Meanwhile, my opponent over here and his band of merry Marxists have turned the streets over to the mob. So that's a crystal clear choice for you on November 3rd as well. Yeah.
And we're never going back to school with Biden, because we have to retrofit all the ventilation systems in every school. Not going to happen.
Bill on the Northwest Side.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I thought that during the debate, Joe Biden made on two occasions rather aggressive comments directed at the North Korean dictator, as if he wouldn't take any gruff from him. But the fact is that during the 8 years of the Obama-Biden regime, the North Korean dictator fired 60 test missiles to perfect the delivery system for his nuclear weapons. And Obama and Biden, they did do some really lame boycott that was not effective at all, but they did nothing. I mean, South Korea and Japan were looking at the United States saying, are you going to let them get a nuclear bomb? And they did nothing. And my other comment is, I just thought that it would have been funny if when President Trump said he would put the fracking statement on his website for Joe Biden to review, he also should have said, I'll also put the video of Hunter Biden's business partners claim that you're both a liar and a fraud on the website, and you could look at that one too, Joe. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Bill.
He did bring Tony to the debates, and he had a press conference outside the debate before, but didn't get a lot of press coverage.
Imagine that. It would have been also fun when Kristen Welker asked the question about the talk that minority parents have with their children about police. It would have been nice if, not nice, but it would have been fun, at least for me, if Trump would have asked Joe Biden if he ever had the talk with Corn Pop. Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think Trump did a lousy job. He missed many opportunities. Because, in other words, he didn't convince any of the CNN or MSNBC viewers. Because this was one chance to talk to everyone without the filter of these lousy press people on those channels. He should have said that with Biden's energy plan, that when you go to sell your home, you have to meet certain standards or you can't sell the home. He should have mentioned that an idiot from Texas, Beto, was going to take your guns away. And he should have mentioned that police are going to be even more handicapped than what they are now. And as far as your immigration from Muslim countries, Trump should have mentioned, okay, where have been the terrorist attacks, Joe? There haven't been any. And then when he was talking about international events, okay, Joe, you guys gave that country $150 billion and there was a war and people were getting their necks chopped off and so forth and so forth. It's all gone. For the first time, Joe, we're going to have maybe world peace. If you think about it, it's almost true. Are there any conflicts going around this world right now?
Well, yes, your point is well taken. Also, he could have raised the progress made in the Middle East. Thanks for the call, Ed. Yeah, appreciate it. Now, it's interesting because some of the focus grouping that I saw from Frank Luntz, for example, words that were used to describe Trump: controlled, reserved, poised, con artist. Not everybody's a Trump fan. Surprisingly presidential. Words used to describe Biden: vague, unspecific, elusive, defensive, grandfatherly. So, did he move anybody who watches CNN and MSNBC? Well, number one, that's a small universe. Number two, that's not the audience he's trying to move. It's much broader than that. If you are being lobotomized by CNN and MSNBC, then you're already lost. But a lot of other people aren't lost, or at least they're open-minded, and they're trying to think, and they're trying to reason through it. And I thought, actually, on the topic of race, his specific appeal to Black Americans, even the suggestion that he's doing surprisingly well among Black Americans to sort of encourage people to say, it's okay, Black Americans, particularly Black men, as Jason Whitlock mentioned in his conversation with President Trump the other day, it's okay to acknowledge the good things that President Trump has done and support him for doing those good things that are in the interests of Black families in this country and Black men in particular. I mean, I say again, it would be nice for Trump to bring this up. The remarkable statistic, and part of this has to do with the 94 crime bill in terms of prosecuting the argument against it. The remarkable data point that 1 in 3 Black men in this country have a felony conviction. You want to understand why so many people are behind the eight ball and have a difficult time being productive citizens. Man, you have a felony conviction. That really hampers you. And I'm not saying so we just waive off all felony convictions. Obviously, I'm not saying that. But I am saying that if you want to talk about overcharging for nonviolent drug crimes, which is really the criticism of the 94 Crime Act, we're not talking about people who commit violent crimes or people even that are habitual drug dealers or drug users, even if they haven't committed any violent crimes, not walking away from law and order. But that's a real problem in terms of how we deal with, for example, drug addicts. If we turn them into felons rather than think about are there alternative ways to deal with their addiction so that they can be productive again, and maybe that's where our public resources should be focused. That's an important conversation. And that's where the criticism of the 94 crime bill should go, and that's essentially where Trump took it last night. Pete in Montgomery.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I was actually offended about the talk question,
mm-hmm.
not because of the talk itself, but my father had the talk with me, and I had the talk with my kids, and I'm as white as a white boy as you could possibly find. I've got no rhythm.
Yeah,
it's not a uniquely color. It's not a uniquely minority event. It's any smart parent tells. Yeah, every smart parent says when a cop is coming up to you in a traffic stop, mm-hmm. this is what you do because they're afraid of you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. That's why I found that particular
question
disturbing.
Thanks for the call. The other thing, the way that's described, sort of the connotation of the talk is why you should be afraid of police if you're a minority parent talking to your son or daughter. That's the implication of the talk question, and Welker asked it in exactly that light, with that tone, rather than the talk being as you're suggesting, Pete, which is, hey, you got your driver's license now, or you're going out and playing with your friends after dark. If a police officer comes up to you, you respect the police officer, you comply with the police officer. Whatever happens, you comply, and then you tell mom and dad, and or mom or dad, and we'll handle it from there. That's the talk. But the talk, the way it's described, is you should fear police because they're racist. That's the way that was asked, right? You have to fear police because they're looking to gun down black boys.
Yeah, they're the villains.
That's what they mean by the talk. And what you mean by the talk, Pete, is a very different thing. Mac in Griffith, Indiana.
You kind of caught me off guard with that 1-3 stack, because that sounds a little high. But I was going to say, Dan, you sound like you're a little upset with your little buddy Lori Lightfoot there, because I'm not sure what's worse, her attitude or her haircut.
Yeah.
She looks like she's coming out with guns a-blazing.
She doesn't know what else to do.
She's the face of Chicago, Mac. You wouldn't know that in Griffith, Indiana. You don't have the kind of enlightened representation we enjoy here. Doug in Pewaukee, Wisconsin.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for your morning show. The only point that I wanted to make is everyone's calling in talking about Trump should be saying this and should have said that.
Yeah.
I think what we're missing is he has done so many things that we could talk about that there's just not enough time to talk about them. And when you have a moderator that's navigating, you know, her objective, you just can't get everything in. So I think we should take a step back and go, like, there's so many things to talk about that we just can't get to it.
Well, I agree with that. Thanks for the call, Doug. But the topics that you do talk about, I it's constructive criticism, but you could just be more effective in driving home what you've done, what your opponent's done, the choice before America. You just do a better job of driving that home than he does, although he was much better last night than he was in the first debate, in my opinion. Cindy and Joliet.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Hi, Amy. One of the things, you know, when you're talking about 1 in 3 individuals have a felony conviction, those conversations should have started a long time ago. And the problem with a lot of families, they're not an intact family with a strong head of household that manages the behavior of kids. And kids seek that family, and if it's not with biological people, they'll get that family feeling from somewhere else, which the substitute family is the gang. And that's why these kids are looking at the end of a cop's gun, because they just don't have any guidance, discipline. Easier said than done, that's for sure. But I'll tell you what, as a single mom, when I raised my son and daughter, they knew when I said no, it was no. And I don't care what their friends were doing. And I had other moms come to me and say, how come you never let da-da-da-da? You're so strict. I said, that's right. And stay out of my business if you want to be my friend. You got to take a hard line on these kids and raise them right.
Yeah.
And yeah, you got to give them a talk, even in 2020. Yeah. Well,
thanks for the call, Cindy.
But you can give the talk in a different context. I mean, when I gave the talk to my boys, which I used to be reserved for the birds and the bees, the talk, but now the talk means something else. I didn't vilify the police. I respect police officers. This is just what you should do if you get pulled over, because they're both learning how to drive right now. And, you know, hands on the dashboard, be respectful, because if you don't comply, as you always say, noncompliance could lead to violence.
Well, and here's the thing. You're making your child less safe by demagoguing police. When you're telling your kid,
amen,
police are your enemy, police are out to gun you down, then when they confront police, what do? Run. And then it escalates. Or worse than run. And again, the reporting on this is about 1 in 3 black men in America have a felony conviction. By contrast, only 8% of the overall population has a felony conviction. So, you know, this is where you have the calls for criminal justice reform. Understandably, this is where a conversation and some thinking on policy needs to be had. But it's also implicates the welfare state. It implicates the management for 50 to 100 years of big government Democrats over all of our big cities where a disproportionate share of black Americans live. I mean, that's failed. The cities have failed black Americans. The Democrats have failed black Americans. The welfare state has incentivized the destruction of the family in general and the black family in particular, as Cindy was mentioning. So how about some accountability for all of these policy failures? Why do we continue to propagate them? Why do we allow for the left to get away with suggesting that compassion comes through government welfare programs? In point of fact, it's quite the opposite. They're predatory, these programs. Predatory, and particularly on black families. On all families, because human beings are the same in terms of incentives and so forth. But particularly black families, because of their disproportionate representation in places that have been destroyed through government ownership, meaning big cities. Boy, that would have been interesting.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and Joe Biden declaring climate change an existential threat, which is why we have to eliminate the oil and gas industries. And nevertheless, his policy is going to create jobs.
All the environmental organizations, as well as labor, the people worried about jobs, to support my climate plan. Because what it does, it will create millions of new good-paying jobs.
The funniest part of that statement is the premise. The environmental organizations and big labor, the people who worry about creating jobs. No, they don't. No. I'm sorry. Big labor worries about protecting the jobs that already exist.
Right.
They're not innovators. And the environmentalist movement is more interested in depopulating the planet than they are in creating jobs. I mean, good grief. That's such a silly statement. I wish Trump would have seized upon it more, but I know somebody who did. His name's Scott McKay. He's the publisher at The Hayride, and he's a contributor to The American Spectator as well. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, Scott, are you there?
Yes. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you now. And okay. So Joe Biden's foray on fossil fuels, your reaction?
Well, I wrote this last night after the debate. The entire thing where Biden, started in on how when he was a kid, there was an oil slick on his mom's windshield because he was living next to look, I'm here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. This is the petrochemical, hub of America. Nobody has an oil slick on their windshield. I mean, where he even got that, I have no idea.
Nobody does now, Scott, thanks to Joe Biden.
it's the most ludicrous thing. And then, but just the whole thing turned into a remake of A Few Good Men. Because it was like the scene at the end of A Few Good Men when Jack Nicholson's character gets baited into giving up the store on the lie he was telling. Trump was like, "You want to get rid of the oil and gas industry?" And Biden basically said yes. He said, "Oh, we're going to transition out of it." And I mean, you could see the entire election turn on that because people in Pennsylvania were like, "I knew it. He said he was going to get rid of fracking, and then he lied, and now he's telling the truth." And the same thing would be true in New Mexico. I mean, remember, the southeastern part of New Mexico has become an absolute, boom area because of the Permian Basin. They're all Democrats. How are they going to vote for Joe Biden now? Just told them they don't have an economic future.
Was President Trump effective, though, when he said, "Are you listening, people in Texas?"
Yes.
He's going to get rid of the oil industry. I thought that was effective.
He said Texas. He said Pennsylvania. He said Oklahoma, Ohio. I mean, I think he probably could have rattled off a whole bunch more because Colorado is an energy state. And, if you're in Colorado, you're like, "Well, that's not good for our economy."
One of those moments, too, because it was one of those moments Joe Biden had a few of them on a few different topics where he made a statement that's so easily disprovable or so easily provable as false. And you don't even have to go back and do the whole montage that President Trump presented at his Erie, Pennsylvania rally earlier in the week of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris both saying they'd ban fracking during the primary. It was Joe Biden on stage saying, "I never said that." And then, as you say, then baited into saying, "I'm going to get rid of the oil and gas industries, but I'm not for banning fracking. I'm not for the industry altogether and transitioning out over some undefined period of time." I don't think that that's a good enough cover story for those people in those industries or for those people who are concerned about energy independence for America.
Well, that's true. But I mean, there was also a little snippet in there where he didn't just say he was. Well, what he said is, "Well, I'm not going to have fracking on federal lands." Then he said he wasn't going to have oil drilling at all on federal lands. So that just wipes out the entire offshore oil drilling industry, which is not, with the low price of oil, hadn't been all that hot anyway. But, I mean, he just basically said that's over. And the thing of it is, those people in that industry are going to believe it because Obama absolutely destroyed offshore drilling after the BP oil spill. So, and it took him years to even think about getting back. And by the time, that had happened, you had the Permian Basin pop and then the price of oil dropped. And, they've been a decade without really having a lot of activity. And Biden just said, "Well, you elect me president, you could completely pack it in forever." So, the long and short of this is that if every oil company doing business in a swing state in America is not on the air by tonight with TV ads saying that Joe Biden's going to destroy, 60,000 jobs in Colorado or whatever, then those guys just are not paying attention and they've checked out, because this is the most prime opportunity to go and turn an election at the end based on something that somebody stupidly admitted. I've never seen it. This guy literally gave away the election if the Republican side is even remotely on the ball.
Well, it's interesting because President Trump could have taken another tack with him, too, sort of the road you're going down in reminding people of what the Obama-Biden administration did on this topic. And that is a piece from Stephen Malloy, junkscience.com, in the Wall Street Journal this week. Rather than arguing about $6 trillion, $30 trillion, $100 trillion price tag on the Green New Deal, numbers that are inconceivable to most people and so relatively meaningless, the idea, here's what Joe Biden can do by himself. He doesn't even need Congress. The same thing that Barack Obama did is regulate these industries through executive orders or through animating the bureaucracy that I've held at bay, the EPAs at the federal level and so forth, to regulate these industries out of existence. It was by executive order, as you say, prohibiting drilling on federal land and other such environmental regulations that can be done through the shadowy fourth branch of government that do not need congressional approval. So Joe Biden can single-handedly do what he's telling you he is inclined to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's with such a short time frame, sometimes it's hard to really knock that out of the park. But, you know, that's what TV ads are for. That's what campaign speeches are for and so on. So, I can't help but think that message will get out because, it just so happens that so many of these swing states are also oil and gas states, and they were paying attention last night. And so, you know, those audiences are going to be receptive to that message.
So what could President Trump do to, work off of that momentum in the next 10 days? Should he be just hitting that home in all the swing states? The fact that he wants raise your hands if you work for the oil industry or fracking.
Yeah.
Biden wants to shut it down.
I would make absolutely sure to, let's make sure we got campaign stops in Pennsylvania and we're going to talk about it. When we're in Ohio, we're going to talk about it. When we're in I would go to Colorado. I would do a big rally at, the airport hangar in Denver or something, and I would talk about how Joe Biden's going to destroy domestic energy. And, and then I would go to New Mexico. To me, those two states, I would make real sure that I do a little swing through there and push that message, because, you might not have had a key issue that you could move the election with in Colorado and New Mexico, and now you do. And if Trump can get Colorado and New Mexico, this election's over.
Well, here's the other thing, too. It's a message that he can tandem with another message that was delivered by Biden at the outset of the debate, which is, I'm a proponent of locking down our economy. It's effectively what he said. I'm for open-ended lockdowns of our economy and our schools. And the schools piece of it is, until they're at such time we can get enough money to retrofit the HVAC system so they can open safely. I mean, well, how long is that we're talking about? It seems to me,
smaller class sizes.
Your outlook for economic growth, for the concerns you have about your economic security, concerns you have about your child's education. Joe Biden has a much longer time horizon to address those concerns than does President Trump.
Well, there's that, and then there was the thing that Trump said that I thought was brilliant and entertaining at the same time. He says, so he wants to knock down all these houses and put up buildings with little bitty windows in them, for the climate change piece. And that's actually really, really accurate based on what Biden is wanting to do. And, nobody wants any of these things, right? I mean, you've got some loons on the left that keep talking about this, and mostly that moment has passed. I don't think that climate change is this big deal with the voters anymore. And Biden has essentially made it the centerpiece of his economic policy. I mean, you talk about economics and he talks about climate change, which, now when you have the whole COVID thing, I think people are much more interested in growing the economy back to where it was than, to take care of the climate. All of these things can be woven in. And I think the answer is, Joe Biden is this old man who has no idea what to do about anything. And to put him in the White House, you deserve what you get.
With respect to looking for the closing 11 days, oil and gas and what Joe Biden said clearly is something you see as central. I would agree with that. The closing argument that Trump offered in terms of, what his inauguration day speech would sound like, what he would say to those who are not currently voting for him. Does he have it where it needs to be to close this out?
Well, I mean, what didn't get discussed at the debate last night, at least not much, and you know, we knew going in that Kristen Welker wasn't going to ask the question about Hunter and the Chinese and the Ukrainians. I mean, Trump brought it up, I thought, enough, and got Biden to give the most, you know, ridiculous response. Well, it wasn't ridiculous. It's what the lawyers told him to say, which is, I didn't take any money from any foreign people. And the answer is, well, no, you had your brother and your son do it, and then you skimmed off the top like the Godfather.
Yeah, he got 10% of a kickback.
Right. I mean, you know, you're the big guy, and they kick up to the big guy. That's how a crime family works. So, but I think that because you know that Steve Bannon and really Rudy Giuliani and the rest of them, I mean, you know that they're going to have continued disclosures coming off of that laptop and Bevin Cooney's emails. And now you got this guy, you know, Bob Ulinski, who, you know, gave a press conference yesterday. It was interesting. I understand he's going to be in front of the Senate today. So, you know, those things I think may actually begin to play into this, you know, more than they have, because these revelations, I think, are going to get, you know, bigger and bigger. And, you know, I just look at the pattern of this, especially since so much of it has come on at Breitbart. You know, I just hearken back to, I guess it was 2009, when James O'Keefe and Andrew Breitbart destroyed Acorn, right? And it was a very similar type of pattern where it was, you know, disclosure, then denial, then disclosure that invalidates the denial. And you know, at some point, the victim has zero credibility whatsoever, and the disclosures just pile on, and they've got nothing to do but shut up shop. And I think that the way this thing has played out in terms of the evidence and how much of it that there is, I think that this is going to be a real problem for Biden, and by the middle of next week, I don't know that he's going to be able to dodge it even as well as he has, which has not been very good.
Yeah, the Grassley and Johnson, their staffs are going to interview Bob Alinsky today. And then ostensibly, depending on what he has to say, they would put him before their respective committees next week, as you said, as you're sort of indicating. And well, that would be an interesting election closer, is to hear from Hunter Biden's business partners about frankly, Joe Biden, most particularly.
Well, I mean, Bevin Cooney has been has disappeared within the federal prison system. And this is, you know, this is the guy who turned over his Gmail account to Peter Schweizer,
right,
from Breitbart. And, what Giuliani has said and what Schweizer has said, I mean, there's 26,000 emails. I mean, this is basically Hillary Clinton's emails that somebody has all of, and they're going to play out in the last 10 days of a presidential election. What's already come out is, you know, these are the emails that Hunter Biden wasn't read into because they knew Hunter Biden was a moron. Who knows what kind of shady deals are in there. And, you know, we know that Devin Archer, who is awaiting sentencing for bond fraud, we know that Devin Archer is, had the run of the White House throughout the Obama administration. The pattern of corruption that these emails could provide, I mean, is pretty significant.
And it's, we're still, it's 2016 Groundhog Day. I just more and more of it. The parallels are just remarkable, aren't they? He is Scott.
Yeah.
He's Scott McKay, publisher at The Hayride and contributor to The American Spectator. Scott, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, a fun moment in the debate that I think a lot of people missed. I had to double take to catch it, was this one.
I don't know where he comes from. I don't know where he comes up with these numbers.
Queens.
I don't know where he comes from. I'm from Queens.
I loved it.
That was funny.
That was good.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Before yesterday's final presidential debate, Tony Bobulinski, a former Army intelligence officer and apparent Hunter Biden business partner, had a press conference. And Bobulinski, just the name, not to go off on a tangent here, but
yeah.
When I heard the name the first time, I couldn't help but thinking of the Beach Boys.
Bobulinski.
Bobulinski. Bobulinski.
Yeah, you know.
Well, you said, and I kept thinking of a song from, are you ready? Del the Funky Homo Sapien?
Sure.
The song Mr. Bobulina, Mr. Bob Bobulina.
Mr. Bobulina, Mr. Bob Bobulina. Mr. Bobulina, Mr. Bob Bobulinski. Mr. Bobulina, Mr. Bob Bobulinski.
Yeah, is it growing on you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's how he should be introduced when he testifies before Senate committees, do a little bit of a mashup. Or
Mr. Bobulinski.
Yeah.
Mr. Bobulinski.
Maybe that could be his theme music when he walks in. I don't know. I mean, this is enough of a circus. It seems appropriate.
But he's a well-respected lieutenant, former wrestler, Penn State. I don't think he's making this stuff up.
Well, the question is, can the D.C. press corps hold out and hold on to their blackout of this story for 11 more days?
Here's Tony.
I had numerous communications with Hunter, Walker, Gilyear, and Jim Biden regarding the allocation of the equity ownership of Sinohawk. On May 13, 2017, I received an email concerning allocation of equity, which says 10% held by H for the big guy. In that email, there's no question that H stands for Hunter, big guy for his father, Joe Biden.
Bobulinski also talked about Vice President Biden and his involvement with Hunter Biden's business dealings. Again, his perspective.
I have also heard that Vice President Biden said on Tuesday that Senator Ron Johnson, the chair of the Senate Homeland Security Committee, should be ashamed for suggesting that Biden family sought to profit from their name. Well, here are the facts I know. And everything I'm saying is corroborated by emails, WhatsApp chats, agreements, documents, and other evidence. And the American people can judge for themselves.
And he went on to detail what we've discussed previously, which is that Hunter Biden ran opportunities through Joe, that Joe Biden, I should say, the big guy, his disposition was for his family members to engage in these far-flung business opportunities for the purposes of the family brand,
right.
I think was the phrase that was used.
And he even talked about the family legacy was on the line and that Hunter and Jim Biden, Joe's brother, were very worried that Joe would be caught in this, would be caught in the middle, and that it would come out.
And so
pretty powerful stuff.
It just seems to me between the New York Post reporting, what's come out from Fox News, this statement from a former Hunter Biden business partner, which is easily verifiable or refutable, combined with the emails, which have not been repudiated by Camp Biden, except in general terms to call it a Russian hoax, as Joe Biden did yesterday prior to calling it. He previously called it a sham or smear campaign, and then he said it's garbage by Trump's henchmen. But there's no questions and answers specifically on point to confirm or deny, and Kristen Welker failed to do that last night. And by the way, so did President Trump. For more on this and the debate generally and the state of the campaign with 11 days to go, pleased to be joined again by Andy Kroll, D.C. Bureau Chief for Rolling Stone Magazine. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, can I get Beach Boys every time I come on? I like that.
Yeah, he like that.
He liked yours better than Mr. Bobulinski.
Do you think Bobulinski? they can do a parody, a quick parody, the Beach Boys for Bobulinski's testimony before Senate committees next week, if that does come to pass? Do you think that is going to come
sure,
to pass?
If Ron Johnson gets his way, absolutely. I'm sure they'll try to get him into the Senate, and the Republicans have the Senate, and control the calendar there. I mean, it's going to be tough because I think they're going to vote to confirm Judge Coney Barrett and then probably break for the rest of the year, or at least until the election, because they're trying to protect that Senate majority. So I don't know. They're going to look through Bobulinski's records and see what they want to do with him. So it sounds like he's handed over some stuff to a couple of Senate committees so far.
Right. And so, I mean, give us your perspective on this story as a legitimate story that demands specific questions be put to Joe Biden. It seems like Kristen Welker tried to derail too much conversation on it yesterday between the two candidates. But gosh, between the Bevin Cooney emails that have been turned over to Peter Schweitzer, between the stories about Hunter Biden's laptop that include the FBI, at least according to Fox News reporting, and now this former Hunter Biden business partner, I mean, that seems to be a lot of interesting information that would prompt inquiry.
I think that the Hunter Biden's business dealings raise all sorts of questions and are basically your classic D.C. gross swampiness. I mean, it's been clear since the moment Joe Biden got into the presidential race, that Hunter Biden was at some point in the last couple of years trying to trade on his name, not any kind of expertise, whether it was in natural gas or in Chinese investments over, you know, in China, trying to trade on the name. But there's never been a connection to Joe Biden, and there still isn't. I mean, that's just the facts of the reporting here. Now, maybe Tony Bobulinski has something in these phones that he's handed over or in these emails that he says are real, but I would rather wait to see what the FBI or even the Senate Homeland Security Committee says. But if you look at the reporting in the Wall Street Journal today, if you look at the corporate filings for the various companies that have been brought up here, there's just no actual connection to the former vice president. I know that's what the Trump campaign is trying to say. I mean, even Bobulinski himself was kind of wishy-washy in his press conference. It was something like the former vice president was aware at a high level. Like, what does that mean? So I think that, you know, Hunter Biden has always been ripe for investigative reporting, for badly in need of greater transparency. There's a reason we haven't heard from him during this campaign at all, the reason he has been sort of tucked away. But this latest thing with Tony Bobulinski, you know, this again, so far, there is no connection to the vice president that we can see, that we can find in the corporate filings, that anyone can see that's been reported out so far.
Well, yes. However, the emails, which again have not been repudiated on point by Camp Biden, suggest a meeting with a Burisma executive that Joe Biden said. And that Joe Biden staffers said could have happened sort of informally, even though it wasn't on his schedule. But that would be inconsistent with Joe Biden saying, I had no idea what was going on with my son's business dealings. I found out after the fact that he was on the board of Burisma. Well, that would run counter to the statements, public statements Joe Biden has made. And if there's nothing to see there, why would you be lying about those things? And also, too, I mean, you know, these are not, you know, completely obtuse people. The idea that, you know, money flows directly from these interests to Joe Biden's bank account. Well, why would you need to do that? This is why you enlist people like Hunter Biden to be separation. Hunter Biden, who, as you just point out, has no experience, has no expertise in these areas, and yet is getting that plum board position on Burisma, is getting a $1.5 billion investment from the largest Chinese state bank for a small private equity concern with no track record. Why would they make that kind of investment in that kind of operation? I mean, come on, it strains the bounds of credulity. So that's what I'm saying. These questions are legitimate. And the idea that this is Russian disinformation and you can just sort of give a generic dismissal of this story as disconnected from Joe Biden and probably Russian disinformation as Joe Biden is attempting to do, that is also not particularly persuasive.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to use a response like this is Russian disinformation. Of course, they're going to, I mean, we have, you know, obviously some evidence from the Senate Intelligence Committee and from the intelligence community itself that Russia is still interfering in our election. But yeah, of course, the Biden campaign is going to use that talking point. My point is that if you look at this most recent story about Bobulinski. I mean, the Wall Street Journal, again, just today, they said that this arrangement that Bobulinski was involved in, this business deal, never actually did any business. And it never had any revenue flow through it. So
understand,
but now, of course, do the emails, like, you know, if they are genuine, do they raise questions worthy of inquiry? Absolutely. But
yes.
The Wall Street Journal has looked at this, you know, and there are corporate filings out there as well that can be reviewed, and nothing ever happened with the company. So,
well, I know,
you know, again,
I know, but
I think this is as much.
Well, Rod Blagojevich never actually sold a Senate seat either, and he went to prison. I mean, the failure to consummate something that is dubious ethically in a political context or potentially illegal does not insulate you from review or potentially prosecution. So, I mean, the fact that the company didn't come together, that deal didn't come together, the effort, if it's true, to try to cut the big guy in for 10% equity stake is a material matter.
Yeah, I mean, the corporate, you know, as the Wall Street Journal reported this morning, corporate records show no role for Joe Biden in this deal that Bob Alinsky was supposedly part of. Now,
a deal that didn't happen.
The Senate Homeland, a deal that didn't happen. Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, so I mean, it's really thin gruel for me at this point. I mean, obviously, we're reporting on it. We're following what the Senate committees are doing. Bob Alinsky has obviously said he's turned over some documents and materials, and if he testifies, we want to see what he says under oath, of course. But right now, I mean, again, this really feels more like a partisan ploy to try to pull the vice president into it than it does feel like some kind of new revelation.
The larger takeaway from the debate last night for you as it informs the final 11 days?
Oh, it was a welcome break from the first debate where they were both candidates were yelling over each other. This time I thought that the moderator did a pretty good job. I thought that we actually got to hear from them distinctly. We got some new information, I think, Joe Biden talking about renewable energy and oil. President Trump somehow still doesn't have a health care plan, which I find pretty remarkable. A better answer than it's going to be a quote-unquote beautiful close quote healthcare plan. But I do think it was much better than either the town halls or the first debate, and people got to hear from both candidates, whether they have distinctly detailed plans or the absence of that. At least I got to hear from them side by side in a civil way one last time, 11 days out from this election. So I think it's good for the American voter. I don't think there was a lot of material difference in what the candidates had to say from the first debate. But it definitely felt more, I guess, presidential.
Well, but I think Americans got robbed of a third debate, because after watching last night's debate, I'm hungry for a town hall type of meeting when you actually hear from people who are undecided. And I just, is there any hope of that happening, or is this over?
There's not any of that happening from the looks of it, unless the campaigns and the network can pull something together. I mean, that was obviously supposed to be number two, the number two event in this three-part debate and town hall series, and we didn't get it. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, I love the town hall setting, and I think that the two town halls, even though they're at the same time last week, had some value to them. You always like hearing from voters, especially voters of different parties or independents and so on. So yeah, I do wish we had something else between now and election day, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen, unfortunately.
Peggy Noonan, writing in the Wall Street Journal, said of the debate and Trump, he won, not a dazzling win, but a win that kept him in the game. If you wanted an argument that justified your decision in a conversation in the office, he probably gave you what you need. She's no Trump fan, as you know. I wonder if the expectations game actually flipped to Trump's favor going into this debate, where Joe Biden, the expectations were very low. If he survived debate one, then he was going to be the victor. And this one, if Donald Trump didn't come over the podium at Joe Biden, he was going to be the victor. And so just his demeanor and his ability to control himself with respect to interrupting and just being respectful and affable shed Trump in a better light than people anticipated.
Yeah, I think that's got to be part of it. I mean, there wasn't like multiple scenes of two 70-year-olds screaming at each other, talking over each other like there were in the first debate. So So the fact that we didn't have that, in the, or that was a low bar to be clear of this debate, I definitely think was the case, and I wish that had been the case, honestly, in retrospect, in the first debate. So, and yeah, I mean, I think Peggy's got it right there. I mean, I think that the president, it's interesting to hear him, it was really interesting to hear him go back to, I think, what was one of his most effective lines in 2016, which was, I'm not a politician. I'm running against a career politician. Obviously, Hillary Clinton is sort of the epitome of that. And, you know, you're going to vote for an outsider. And, you know, again, it's interesting to hear him say that now as the president of the United States.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe there is some mental, you know, jujitsu that he is doing there that at least for maybe for his supporters that he needs to still galvanize and to turn out and to some independent, some undecided voters at this point, maybe. That still holds some appeal to him. He obviously used it for a reason last night. So to hear him bring that back out, I definitely caught my attention.
Yeah, I think that actually was his most effective tack, that he needs to run as a challenger to the mentality in the Beltway, which persists even though he's the president, and he finally did that last night. I thought that was the best, in addition to recognizing that it's only when Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon yell at each other that's entertaining. So that was progress as well. Andy Kroll, D.C. Bureau Chief for Rolling Stone. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
And he joined
us. Pleasure. Thanks.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, you know the portion of the debate that dealt with immigration policy. And the 545 kids where they can't connect them to their parents, that back and forth. Trump talked about how kids are being brought over through the drug cartels and through coyotes.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of leftists online who think he meant literally a coyote, like the animal.
They don't know. Or if he says mules, too, that's... You think they're going over on mules?
From the party that brought you Hank Johnson, the Georgia State Democrat Party, Georgia State Representative Darshan Kendrick. Trump just said 545 kids can't find their parents for came over through cartels and coyotes. How the hell does a coyote bring a whole human across the border? Lord, stop talking. And there are many, many other examples of this where the left doesn't know
what a coyote
is. They're happy to inveigh on border policy. It's just
been going
remarkable.
On too. I mean, for a long time. Anybody who's lived along the border, parents they send their kids there, then they establish residency, and eventually they bring their family over.
You know, it speaks
in some cases.
It speaks to the level of ignorance in the body politic, particularly on the left.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The debate last night opened up with President Trump and Joe Biden talking about COVID-19 response as anticipated, and there was a real philosophical difference between the two, as Trump pointed out.
I say we're learning to live with it. We have no choice. We can't lock ourselves up in a basement like Joe does. He has the he has the ability to lock himself up. I don't know. He's obviously made a lot of money someplace, but he has this thing about living in a basement. People can't do that.
I liked that he made mention of the ability to lock himself in a basement. What have we said throughout these many months and these lockdown policies? For people who blithely advocate for business lockdowns, shutdowns, they're basically saying, I'm rich, I have options. For people who advocate for indiscriminate school lockdowns in spite of the evidence and the interpretation of the evidence by medical professionals the world over, go ahead, lock the schools down. They're saying, I have options. And so for him to say he can afford to do that, that was a great appeal to me, to middle and lower middle income families who don't have those same options.
They don't have choices. They have to be out there on frontline workers. And let us not forget what Joe Biden, I know there's a lot of single issue voters out there, moms and grandparents who are sick of e-learning, who want their kids back at school. Joe Biden is not going to let that happen.
For example, schools, they need a lot of money to open. They need to deal with ventilation systems. They need to deal with smaller classes, more teachers, more pods. And he's refused to support that money, or at least up to now.
Did you get a cliff notes from Jesse Sharkey, our CTU union president? Smaller classroom sizes, changing ventilation systems.
That's where Joe Biden is at. He's there to represent the teachers' union's position, yeah. Not the kids' position.
No.
He's essentially a modern-day Al Shanker, former teachers' union boss, who infamously said, as soon as kids start paying union dues, I'll start representing kids. That's essentially the Joe Biden position. For by the way, in terms of learning to live with this, what Trump said, it's not just his own experience with the monoclonal antibody. It's also approval yesterday of Gilead's drug Remdesivir, formerly by the FDA, beyond emergency use. It's also news out, as President Trump was talking about. You're talking about American companies, but there's news out of the UK. The Oxford University AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine, quote, works perfectly and builds strong immunity, according to a study that was conducted by the University of Bristol. Dr. David Matthews from Bristol School of Cellular and Molecular Medicine, who led the research into the Oxford AstraZeneca study, quote, until now, the technology hasn't been able to provide answers with such clarity, but we now know the vaccine is doing everything we expected, and that is only good news in our fight against the illness. Sarah Gilbert, who leads the Oxford University vaccine trial, said the study confirms that large amounts of the coronavirus spike protein, are produced with great accuracy. This goes a long way to explain the success of the vaccine in inducing a strong response. And the UK's deputy chief medical officer said the National Health Service there was preparing to launch the AstraZeneca vaccine shortly after Christmas. They're still in stage three trials. But at this pace, with the research results they're getting back, they're talking about a mass rollout that could come as early as December. So when Trump said weeks away, he didn't mention Oxford and AstraZeneca specifically, but he mentioned other big pharma companies and their drug trials that are also producing encouraging results, including Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer. So that wasn't just mindless happy talk on the matter of a vaccine. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined by C. Boyden Gray, who served as White House counsel under President George H.W. Bush and U.S. ambassador to the EU under President George W. Bush. His firm, C. Boyden Gray & Associates, has represented the energy industry, among other clients. C. Boyden Gray, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You recently wrote about another therapeutic that has had a rocky 6 months in terms of public acceptance because it had become so politicized. That's hydroxychloroquine. And why did you feel compelled to revisit that potential therapeutic? Well, it's not a potential. It's actually being used by emergency room physicians across the country. But why HCQ revisiting that to the exclusion of so many other things that have now been developed?
Well, I wrote about it, not just because of, the election and then whatnot, but because it represents an attitude by big pharma towards innovation and the Food and Drug Administration, which works very closely with big pharma to produce, in most cases, very, very good therapies for tons of difficulties, medical difficulties. But this particular drug, it's not a drug, well, it is a drug, it was approved 70 years ago, has been used by 2 billion people, is very, very safe, is very well understood, and the theory that I sort of advance, not aggressively, is that the establishment, the elite, doesn't want cheap, off-label, generic, 10-cent-a-pill treatment when you can make millions and billions off of drugs that for which you can charge $3,000, $5,000 or more a dose.
Particularly when the government is already sort of committed to picking up the tab because of the exigencies surrounding the pandemic. And this is interesting, too, because, you know, the perception was that initially when Trump touted HCQ, it was, well, he's being reckless. He's not listening to the scientists. There's some questions about it. Tony Fauci isn't real enthusiastic about it. And it's just seen as, well, this is just Trump talking out of his behind rather than the moneyed interests in developing other therapeutics where you can, as you say, charge more money and so on and so forth, that there's always a financial interest here, and that really hadn't been properly contemplated or reported upon by the press corps.
That's correct. That's why I wrote this this piece. There have been some very strong studies. The first one that got people's attention and probably got Trump's attention, I don't know, was a study done by a very highly regarded French doctor in Marseille, and it showed pretty strong efficacy when administered with an antibiotic. That triggered a response from the media of immediate hostility, and the hostility continued on and on and on, and culminated in a big study published, reported by Lancet, which is the leading public health journal in the world, that it had no efficacy and posed heart dangers. And then a week later, they had to retract it because it was flawed, it was fake. And as the editor of Lancet said, it was a monumental fraud. So somebody was out there funding a monumental fraud in order to disqualify or undermine hydroxychloroquine. And, you know, within a week or so, the FDA, canceled its emergency use authorization. And then later, two bigger trials, one from a very high regarded hospital in New York, Mount Sinai, and the Henry Ford hospital system separately, did trials which showed similar results, 50% reduction in mortality. And the mainstream media totally ignored the Mount Sinai study. And the FDA refused a request by the Ford hospital system for a limited authorization to pursue further study, especially for early use of the drug, early use in the progression of the virus, in order to bolster what they had already found. And the FDA said, no, you can't do that. So basically, the combination of the media hostility, and which included a 8,000-word New York Times Magazine section hit on the French doctor, the French researcher, basically combination meant that could not only be no further study of this drug and its potential, but no further discussion of it.
Yeah, and look, and then the Lancet published a study that suggested that HCQ didn't work, and they had to retract that study and really embarrass themselves and hurt their credibility, despite being, you know, as you said, the preeminent medical journal in the Western world. And it just speaks to this politicization. This came up in the debate last night with 40% of Americans saying they won't take a vaccine if a vaccine checks out, even if it checks all the FDA's boxes for approval, even for emergency use initially. In Illinois, the governor there, J.B. Pritzker, says that
they're going to have another layer of bureaucracy.
That he's going to do his own testing for any vaccine that's approved by the FDA because things have been so politicized, which, of course, is just politicizing the politicized. I talked to Dr. Jonathan Ellen from Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital, former CEO there. He said, there's no basis to do that. There's no need to do that. There's nothing that the FDA is doing from a medical practitioner's point of view, from a research scientist's point of view, with respect to these vaccine trials and the protocols they've set forward for approval that is particularly questionable or obviously political. But this seems to be a new era now, and you have some perspective on this, where everything is politicized, including science. So it's one thing if you can't tell, you know, which politician is telling the truth about a particular topic. Now you can't tell which epidemiologist, which infectious disease expert is telling the truth, because they've become politicized too.
That's correct. And that's very, very dangerous. And that's, yes, that's why I wrote this piece. I don't know why it's going to be ventilated, but I was thrilled when I got the request from you to discuss it further, because I do think that while the FDA probably is handling, or is, I'm sure, handling the vaccines well, these are all vaccines that make a lot of money for a lot of people. What I worry about is the speed of innovation and the speed of production of cheaper, easier to access therapies. Remdesivir at the moment can only be administered in a hospital, and it's limited in its availability, very limited. And the drug that the president claims cured him, the monoclonal antibody, is also going to be extremely limited and available only for a very few people. But this drug, hydroxychloroquine, there are tens of millions of
doses, right?
Pills available.
Yeah.
And for nothing, for 10 cents a pill.
And Mr. Gray, I just wanted to ask you a question. You mentioned in your piece that hydroxychloroquine's been around for 70 years as a malaria drug. A lot of people in Africa take that. Is that why there's a really low number of COVID cases coming out of Africa, because they take hydroxychloroquine? Could it be used as a preventative?
Well, that seems to be the pattern. That's true in a couple of other countries. Yes, I think that's why it was thought, if you look back, that Africa would be probably the worst disaster of all the continents with this virus, because their public health systems are so far behind, you know, the developed world. But they've had a much lower rate of infection than any other continent. And I believe it's because hydroxychloroquine is used so widely to control malaria.
He is C. Boynton Gray, served as the White House counsel under President George H.W. Bush and as U.S. ambassador to the EU under President George W. Bush. C. Boynton Gray, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and just on the matter of race, critical race theory, The identitarian politics of the Marxist left, most focused on race. A wonderful statement from the British Equalities Minister, Kemi Badenoch, who's a black woman. The British Equalities Minister, you have an Equalities Minister? That sounds just a bit Orwellian, don't you know?
Yeah.
But listen to what she said about critical race theory being taught in the schools, as it is here in America, insinuating itself more and more, becoming more and more prevalent in all those corporate retreats and C-suite Black Lives Matter compliant policies.
What we are against is the teaching of contested political ideas as if they are accepted facts. We don't do this with communism, we don't do this with socialism, we don't do it with capitalism. And I want to speak about a dangerous trend in race relations that has come far too close to home to my life, and it is the promotion of critical race theory, an ideology that sees my blackness as victimhood and their whiteness as oppression. I want to be absolutely clear, this government stands unequivocally against critical race theory. Yeah. Some schools have decided to openly support the anti-capitalist Black Lives Matter group, often fully aware that they have a statutory duty to be politically impartial. Black lives do matter, of course they do. But we know that the Black Lives Matter movement, capital BLM, is political. I know this because at the height of the protest, I have been told of white Black Lives Matter protesters calling, and I'm afraid, I apologize for saying this word, calling a black armed police officer guarding Downing Street a pet. That is why we do not endorse that movement on this side of the House. It is a political movement, and what would be nice would be for members on the opposite side to condemn many of the actions that we see this political movement instead of pretending that it is a completely wholesome anti-racist organization. There is a lot of pernicious stuff that is being pushed, and we stand against that. We do not want to see teachers teaching their white pupils about white privilege and inherited racial guilt. And let me be clear, any school which teaches these elements of critical race theory as fact, or which promotes partisan political views such as defunding the police without offering a balanced treatment of opposing views, is breaking the law.
Maybe Trump can see if she wants to be co-education secretary with Betsy DeVos in his second term. Oh, and by the way, maybe she can get on Fox News Sunday and educate Chris Wallace, who thinks critical race theory is just a bunch of happy talk about diversity. It's much more pernicious than that. Kemi Badenoch has it exactly right. Chris Wallace in the first debate had it exactly wrong. And so do your teachers and administrators that are pushing this on your kids in schools. And it takes somebody from the UK to stand up for your kids. That's a real commentary on where we are in this country.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Call in now! Open Mic Friday!
Now, it's going to be an interesting weekend with the lockdowns of restaurants and bars, the limitations on gatherings, both in the collar counties and as Mayor Triple Threat announced yesterday, also in the city.
Yeah, so it's called the business curfew. Everything shuts down. She wants you home and in bed by 10 p.m. But to make matters worse,
she's going to tuck me in.
Yeah, she might. Maybe bring a little milk and cookies and a warm blanket. But made it, to make it worse, now they're governing us in our homes.
I do not want you having anybody into your home who is not essential for being there. They live there, or they're providing essential service like home health care, education, or child care. And if you have people in, please, masks are crucial.
Yeah, Dad, you can't come over to my place. One of the Rona Busters said you can't. So,
Are you essential, Dad, in my life? I don't know. And Lori Lightfoot, I mean, she took after police and firefighters. She's going to be out patrolling them to make sure that they're wearing their masks.
The time for educating people into compliance is simply over. If you're an officer, you're a fireman, paramedic, if you're a city employee, I'm telling you now, as your mayor, as your boss, you must wear a mask, period.
As your boss? I thought she worked for us. But she's talking to city employees, so yeah, she's going to make sure that they're...
Is she just talking to city employees? Or when she's patrolling the streets with her...
security detail?
Well, her superhero friends, the Rona Busters, is she going to also accost Chicagoans not wearing masks? That should be interesting. Start there, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Now's a call to action, man. We got to do this. Don't close your business. Don't do it.
This was a topic of much conversation last night's debate, of course. It led the debate, the philosophical difference between Joe Biden, who was promoting open-ended lockdowns explicitly, and President Trump, who says we have to learn to live with the virus, and we can do that, and we can do that safely as possible, you know, in a world with risk. Oh, Tom in Bridgeport, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hey, Tom.
Tom.
Hey, how you doing? So, this whole situation yesterday during the debate, it drove me crazy, where they said, we have 500 children and we can't locate their parents. We know where the children are, right? So that's easy enough. But where are the parents? I mean, if my child was missing, I would make it my life's mission to get somebody to get my child back for me. I'd be standing outside of that facility saying, hey, here I am. Where's my kid? Give me my kid back. And they're saying they can't find the parents. Why? Because the parents don't want to be found.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Bob in Chicago.
Yes. Hello. Listen, I own a bar, and this is insanity, what Mayor what Lightfoot and Pritzker are doing. And the only way that it can be stopped is if people fail to don't cooperate. They just don't cooperate with this insanity that is going to drive the economy of this city and this state. It's going to destroy whatever little is left of it. And it's almost a moral duty of people not to cooperate, ignore it, open your businesses, go about your life as if it doesn't exist, because the insanity that Pritzker and Lightfoot are doing without any authority, without the state legislature, without the city council, just getting on a podium and saying so, is going to destroy the entire economy of this city. There'd be nothing left.
I'm not asking, Bob, I'm not asking for disclosure of your business or the neighborhood in which it's located, but have you talked to other business owners, whether in the bar and restaurant industry or other business owners, about collective action like you're describing?
Yes, but everybody agrees that it's insanity. Everybody is, of course, afraid of their license suspension. Yep. And my point is if everybody doesn't cooperate, if there's a good percentage of them, then they can't revoke everybody's license, because if everybody appeals, it'll overwhelm the system. So if we need a good percentage of people, 25% to start with, and other people will join. And then if simply don't cooperate, and people come into the bars and restaurants, the politicians have no choice but to give up, because
let me suggest something else too. You need some public face on this too, and that means getting together as many individual owners and ownership groups as you can, and making a real public protest of this, so that there is numbers being brought to bear. You need to enlist, perhaps even shame, in order to enlist some of the big players too, the Let Us Entertain Yous and the Gibsonses of the world and so forth, to provide some aid and comfort to the smaller owner operators of restaurants and bars. I mean, it really takes a collective effort. So it can't be quiet. It can be in the organizing phase, but if you're going to do this, I would just encourage you and encourage others to make a big public show of this, to enlist your customers, your patrons, to put aldermen in these wards on the defensive, and then use them to leverage the police, to leverage the mayor. But you got to present a show of force.
Well, I agree, but I think the first step would be to be open. Once a lot of people are open that first day when they say they shouldn't be, and then go public and say, look, we were open, everybody come in, and we're not cooperating, it'll snowball from there. But the first step is to be open that day and for people to come in and just ignore this lunacy that's going to absolutely destroy. You know, the bar has to buy supplies, or suppliers, or their suppliers,
yes, right,
or truck drivers. The economy is just not shutting a few bars. You're going to devastate an entire economy, cab drivers, Uber drivers. I mean, it goes through the whole economy, and it's going to devastate it. And there'll be nothing left except city employees collecting a check on taxes that are paid because they got to get debt in order to pay their employees and put us further into debt. It's an absolute insanity.
Thanks for the call, Bob. And the other thing, too, is to work through all of these neighborhood business associations and put the pressure on these associations and other members of the associations to act in concert with one another too. The Greater Michigan Avenue and the Old Town and all these neighborhood associations. Let's start to put some pressure on people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also in DuPage County, Will counties, there is a growing number of restaurant and bar owners who are saying we're not doing it. One is the Lockport Stagecoach. He said, "Too many people. We've been here for 30 years. I have dozens of employees who depend on restaurants for their livelihoods. We are not trying to be rebellious or anti-maskers, anti-people's health, or any of other nonsense, but this is a decision out of survival.
Richard in the loop. Hey, Richard.
Richard.
I'm here. Hello.
Yep, go ahead.
Dan?
Yeah, go ahead, Richard. You're on.
Three things real quick. Number one, I think Joe Biden had the answers to yesterday's questions, especially the ending question, which was very eloquent and much too complicated for him. Number two,
we had 3 days to practice.
Pardon?
I said he had 3 days to practice.
Well, he had the question and he had the answers, and so he was good to go. Number two is he never lied when he said he didn't accept money from China because he accepted money from his son Hunter.
And plausible deniability. Okay.
And number three, no, that's a good question. He would have passed a lie detector on that. Number three, Dan, I'm nominating you for some public office somewhere. Whatever office you pick, I'm working for you.
Yes.
You got my phone number? Call me up when you're ready.
Thanks, thanks, Richard. I appreciate the vote of confidence. Meet me somewhere warm. I'll give you a
hint. And you'll run for office there.
Maybe, if they'll have me with my Chicago stink on me when I arrive. Richard in Indian Head Park.
Yes. Morning, Dan and Amy. I think what the president should have said, he should have directed it towards the American people, telling them if they liked the way things were going in the country before the virus, and if they were happy the way their lives were and their businesses were going before the virus, in his next 4 years, that he would promise him he would do everything in his power to beat this virus and get the country back to the days when we weren't fighting such an awful virus.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it. Verlon on the South Side.
Well, you've all covered everything it is to talk about when it comes to the debate. So I'm going to take it in a different direction.
All right.
With all due respect to Rudy Giuliani, I want to talk about America's new mayor, Pete Buttigieg.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you all caught what he said over the weekend, but he said that the president has failed in every foreign affair that he has entered. Well, I want to know, is he delusional or a born liar? Because did he forget about the mother of all bombs that Donald Trump dropped on Syria and you haven't heard a peep from them since? Him keeping North Korea in line for all of these years since he's been president? The three terrorists that he took off the face of the earth that was terrorizing people from around the world, and the peace in the Middle East that John Kerry said couldn't happen without Palestine. I think it was Palestine, but he stepped over Palestine and made the deal with about three countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask the question again, Dan, is he delusional or born liar?
All right. Thanks for the call, Verlon.
And I did like the last night when President Trump talked about, you know, when he met Obama before, you know, the transition of power, Obama said to him, your biggest threat is North Korea and there will be a nuclear war. And did that happen? No.
Well, and the other thing, Joe Biden, you know, Trump, just in that exchange quickly, mm-hmm. Biden saying, oh, Kim Jong-un wouldn't meet with us because we were interested in talking denuclearization. Well, Trump should have said, yeah, so was I. And we have talked denuclearization. And obviously we haven't made the kind of progress we had hoped. But the only way to deal with trying to get a denuclearized North Korea is to triangulate them with their Chinese sponsors, as well as to engage them. So there's an effort been made there. But of course, it's about denuclearization of a rogue state like North Korea. You dum-dum, Joe Biden. That would have been better. Bill in Cape Coral, Florida. It's not far.
Hey, good morning. Yeah. I'm listening to you down here in sunny Florida, Cape Coral.
Yeah.
I used to be in Edison Park, but I left.
Yeah, good
now,
call.
When I go back to visit, I'm going to walk right in front of her house because I'm no longer a Chicagoan, so she can't tell me what to do. I'm not an Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to stand right in front of her house, and I might even pitch a tent when I'm there instead of getting a hotel on her city walk. Like, she lets all the bums sleep under the place all over the place.
Yeah.
And then have her throw me out. So if I'm in jail, will you send me a letter?
Sure. Well, yeah, just let us make us your first phone call, Bill, if they throw you in jail so we can get you back to Cape Coral where it's safe, your safe space.
There's no mask mandate either.
No,
I wonder what like that's like.
No, there's not. Rich and Racine.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
You guys pretty much covered it, but I'm just like, they don't, people forget that the president was nominated for 4 Nobel Peace Prizes. We're not at war.
Nominated 4 times, right.
Right? Yeah. Every one of these people, John Kerry, Joe Biden, Mitt Romney, Nancy Pelosi, all their kids have energy interests in Ukraine. I'm just wondering, is there a test we got to take to get one of these jobs? Can we apply for it through the state? Is it through the State Department? I mean, whose palm do we got to grease?
Right. Cut me in or cut it out. Thanks, Rich. Candace in Mount Pleasant.
Good morning. Great show. I love that Trump had John Daly there and Kid Rock. That's hilarious, especially John Daly. John Daly is so cool.
What was John Daly's COVID cure again, like at the early stages? Wasn't it like vodka and lemonade or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Arnold Palmer with vodka. Yeah.
Called it John Daly. Okay. Yeah.
I plan on walking with my friends today for Trump, which will be interesting. And I plan on getting a long list of undecided, and I'm taking the Claremont Institute transcript and a couple others to people. But I've been placing huge signs in people's yards of from people who are getting them torn down. And I love the spirit of people. They just keep putting them back up. But when they take the little ones down, that's when I give them a big 4x5 because I really want to be in your face. But one thing my mom said this morning, she goes, you know, Biden had a pen in both hands, and I didn't understand what he was doing with these two pins in the hands. I thought maybe it's something like when you go to the chiropractor and they put that thing on your back, you know, that electric thing that helps your muscles. Maybe it was like some kind of signal to him or trying to keep him zapped and woke up.
No, I think it's if he has a pen in one hand, it shifts his weight such that he'll tip over. So he has to have a pen in both hands to maintain his equilibrium. Thanks for the call, Candace. Oh, our old friend Tom Sudeikis in Barrington. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Good morning, guys. Hope you're doing well. Hey, one question, one comment.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, if Biden's putting a lid on his campaign 15 days a month, how many days a month is he going to put a lid on his presidency? And then this thing with the restaurants, I want to tell you, this is a civil unrest I can get behind. I have formed a large gang of roving eaters, and we are preparing to hit about 10 restaurants a week. We're starting with one today in Roselle that was aforementioned yesterday. And we are big eaters and even better tippers. So look out. We're coming out. We'll see you guys.
Good. Go to the Stagecoach and go to the Pizza Kitchen. That's in Roselle. And Kai's.
I like it. It could be, so Tom Sudeikis' roving band of eaters, it could be like Hoovervilles during the Great Depression.
Right.
These will be J.B. Pritzker eating clubs.
Yeah.
It'll just be a bunch of fat guys going from restaurant to restaurant to keep the restaurant industry afloat. I like
it. Tom Sudeikis is not fat, by the way.
He's
fit. The guy works out.
He could lose a few.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is so, no, those are muscles. That's not fat. And yes, muscle weighs more than fat.
Yeah, okay. All right. Stop, brown nosing Tom Sudeikis. Come on. Steve in Glencoe.
Yeah, hi. After I was watching the Fox commentary, I turned to CNN to see what they were doing. And they were tracking 11 undecided voters.
Oh, I saw that.
Throughout the election. Yeah, and so they asked who changed their mind. 7 of the 11 had made a decision. 7 of the 7 went for Biden.
Yep.
And an 8th said once he's pro-life, and once Coney Barrett is confirmed, he's going to vote for Biden because he now thinks the Supreme Court is conservative enough to deal with Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 8 out of 11 flipping to Biden. What do you make of that?
I don't know. Were those same undecided voters that were at the Biden town hall?
Were all decided voters and anti-Trumpers?
No, not decided voters. They're like Dem staffers. I mean, you know, I don't know. Those CNN, you know, some of the town halls are interesting. Some of them, I don't know. Is that a representative sample of the small cohort of Americans who are undecided? I didn't see the focus group, and I don't know who administered them. But I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, they were North Carolina voters.
Yeah,
so that's not rapidly red, a blue state, obviously.
No, it's purplish.
All right. I thought it was interesting.
It is.
I thought it was interesting.
It is.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Steve.
Yeah, I watched that. I didn't believe it.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, and this is why you continue to make the arguments to close. So that person said, oh, I'm pro-life, so I'm just waiting for the ACB confirmation. Oh, okay. So let's work the logic there. You're waiting for the ACB confirmation because you're pro-life. Do you want the next president who nominates Supreme Court justices to be Donald Trump, who's nominated three pro-lifers, or do you want it to be Joe Biden? Do you want the next president who will nominate dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of federal judges to be Joe Biden, pro-abortion, or do you want it to be Trump, pro-life? I mean, the logic just escapes me, which is why I'm a little suspect about it. Not that people aren't intellectually consistent or always connecting the dots appropriately, but this is where people in you need to control, you know, control by meaning inform those within your social circle. So when you hear your pro-life friend say something as idiotic as that pro-lifer said from North Carolina that Steve was mentioning, you can challenge the thinking there. Yeah. Dawn in Plainfield.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. My argument for voting for Trump is I say I don't care what letter follows their name. I'm voting for anybody who's for school choice. Mm-hmm. And then I explained to them that my twins have never been allowed in the general education classroom. As a matter of fact, they've never even been allowed to ride the same bus as the general education classroom classmates. And they kind of look at me, and then they don't know what to say. And so this is kind of my way of exposing that those who really say that they are for human rights and protections, they are not. And I think that we really need to expose it more. And I think the argument against Biden is that I don't think he really knows what he stands for. He looked really,
Yeah, he's a cipher. But I'll tell you what, Dawn, thanks for the call. The special needs kids being ostracized, it's really interesting. Reminds me of one of my favorite observations from Chesterton. Those who have given in to unreason are ready for unkindness. And that's an illustration of it. We close with Chuck from Delavan. Make it quick, Chuck.
Oh, wow. Hey, I want to tell you, Amy, I went out and bought a pair of cowboy boots with a big heel so I won't look so short when I'm dancing with you in a couple weeks.
Nice.
I want to talk today not about dancing, but I wanted to tell you about a wonderful guy that used to own a restaurant called Gotta Be Crepes, started out selling crepes in a garage in Evanston, worked his way all the way up to where he was top 100 in the country, number 39th, for best restaurant.
And what happened? Quickly, and, quickly, Chuck, what happened?
He's closing.
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.